Welcome to the One Where We Watch Friends podcast. This is a podcast all about the 90s sitcom Friends. We're going to rewatch each episode one by one and dive into the details. I am one of your hosts, Lindsay. With me is my co-host, Jim.
Hi. That was our introduction to Ross in the pilot episode.
Oh, that was a spot-on Ross impression right there. Good job.
And his highs get a little sadder as we go on.
Yes. He's like Eeyore.
Yes, for sure.
But we've all had that Eeyore friend.
We have.
You have, specifically.
And we've all been through breakups where we've become Eeyore, too.
Oh, absolutely. Especially in our 20s.
For sure. So today, we are discussing Season 1, Episode 1, also referred to as The Pilot, or The One Where It All Began, or The First One, or The One Where Monica Gets a Roommate. It's got all of these names.
So it's The Pilot, a.k.a. whatever, yes. A.k.a. what? I mean, why do I have so many titles? Just pick something and go with it.
Because, A, you don't really name the pilot episode because you don't know if it's going to get picked up.
Oh, I had never thought that far.
So they hadn't named it like they did going forward, episode two and on. It is The One Where, right? But this one didn't have a one. So it's either been fan made up or the writers have said it after the fact or whatever. But I was able to find four names online. One of them is The Pilot. That's what we're discussing, the first one.
What'd you think about it?
It was interesting to go back and watch it 30 years later.
Yeah. It was also interesting to see the undeveloped characters.
Yes.
Right? Like little baby characters just getting started with little wobbly legs.
Right. So we know, obviously, in hindsight, how those characters develop, and we know their arcs and all their changes and everything. But just looking at this one, I think you get a good idea of who at least half of them are, and maybe more than half.
I think there was someone, though, that was very underdeveloped, but I will save that maybe for a little bit later.
Okay, fantastic. I think there's two people that were very undeveloped.
So here's a problem that I had, speaking of being in your 20s, this is a problem that I had back in college. If, say, they would tell us watch a movie or watch a video or do whatever, and then, like, summarize it, I would basically just rewrite the story. I always had a hard time summarizing things.
Yes.
So I have a little summary of the episode, and it's like six paragraphs.
Okay, so before you get to that, let's just do a little bit of, I don't know if they're fun facts or just statistics about.
Oh, you got some fun facts for me?
I do. Well, I don't have fun facts, but I got some statistics. Maybe some fun facts.
Okay, lay it on me.
So the episode premiered on September 22nd, 1994, in the 8:30 to 9 slot, and that's if you're Eastern time. If you're Central time, it would have been 7:30 to 8. It had 21.5 million viewers.
Now, I don't really know what the standard sitcom was going for back in the 90s, but that feels like a lot to me.
Well, I think it's a lot for a pilot episode, but here, I can give you some more. It was the 15th rated show that week. It was sandwiched in between Mad About You at 14 and Frasier at 16. Now, do you want to know the top five of that week?
Yeah, I would love to.
Home Improvement was number one. Seinfeld was two. Grace Under Fire was three. Monday Night Football was four, which you'll never see again. Monday Night Football is always one now. And then Roseanne was five. You recognize all of those shows, obviously.
You know how I feel when you bring up Grace Under Fire.
No, I don't.
Well, since this isn't a Grace Under Fire episode, we'll just leave it at that. But I felt like you threw that in just to irk me.
No, I was literally picking the top five episodes of that week by the Nielsen ratings. So do you remember last week when I said that NBC needed Friends to be good?
Yes.
This is why. Four of the top five this week are ABC shows.
So they were desperate for something to bring them back into the relevant
genre. Yeah, because at that time all they had was Seinfeld. Right? Frasier was 16, Mad About You was 14. So they needed Friends, and then obviously ER as well. So why don't you go ahead and give us your summary? and see if it matches with my summary.
I'll try to go as quickly as I can. The first episode of Friends, titled The Pilot, sets the stage for the lives of the six friends that we've already talked about living in New York City. The story begins with Monica at Central Perk chatting with her friends Chandler, Joey, and Phoebe when her brother Ross arrives.
Hi.
Visibly heartbroken after learning his ex-wife Carol is now living with a female partner. Ross laments his loneliness, expressing his desire to be in a relationship and to be married again, only for Rachel Green to burst into the coffee shop in a wedding dress, having just run out of her wedding to bury her fiancé. Rachel reconnects with Monica. I guess they had been high school best friends, and explains her decision to abandon her wealthy but unfulfilling life. Monica invites Rachel to stay with her, which Rachel accepts, embarking on her first attempt at independence.
But did she really invite her? Or did Rachel just say, I'm going to stay here with Monica?
I feel like she invited her for a cup of coffee and Rachel just never left.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Monica goes on a date with a man named Paul, who claims he hasn't been able to perform in the bedroom since his divorce, a story that later turns out to be a ploy he uses just to get women. As Rachel begins to adjust to her new life, though, she realizes the reality of being financially cut off by her father, who's upset with her, right, for leaving Barry at the altar. She decides to take control, or maybe the friends kind of force her to take control of the situation, by cutting up her credit cards and getting a job. The group supports her through the transition, solidifying their bond as a new little makeshift family. Throughout this episode, we get a glimpse of each character's quirks. So Chandler's sarcastic, Joey's charming but clueless, Phoebe, whimsical and a little odd, Ross is very emotional and vulnerable, and Monica, very nurturing and a good friend. The episode ends with a friend sitting together in Central Perk, setting the tone for their deepening relationships and the humor and heart that will define the series.
Okay, I think that was a pretty good summary of it all. I think you covered everything. I would have been a lot shorter. I would have been
I told you, I got a little into it.
I'd have been like a group of five friends are hanging out in a coffee shop doing what friends do. Talking, telling stories, teasing each other, lamenting on their life. When a woman in a wedding dress runs in.
In a wet wedding dress.
Yes. I like the fact that Rachel's clueless about life. She's spoiled. She's lived a rich girl's life, both from her dad and then apparently from Barry.
Uh-huh.
And now she comes out and has no clue what the real world
is like. No, absolutely no clue.
So do you know, John Alan Nelson is really the only kind of guest star that we get in this episode. And I wouldn't even call him like a guest star. He's really just a character there. And he's the one who played Paul, the wine guy.
So watching the episode, I didn't remember all the ins and outs of the storyline. So I did not remember that he was pulling a fast one.
Oh, I did, yeah.
On Monica.
I did.
So
I kind of feel like you were Monica and I was Joey. I can't believe you didn't know that was a lie.
No, absolutely. I mean, I'm thinking it's really awkward that he's going to take her to dinner and be quite so frank with her about things.
Yes.
Seems a little forward, but I didn't see it coming.
I saw it coming. But I also knew it had happened, right? I've seen the pilot episode a few times.
He looked familiar, though, as far as like an actor. Like, he's like that guy from the 90s. He was handsome. I feel like he did a lot of maybe supporting stuff.
Yeah, he was one of those guys that was in an episode here and there of a lot of television shows in the 80s. Scarecrow and Mrs. King, Hunter, Quantum Leap, Matlock, Baywatch. And then as we get into the 90s, Murder, She Wrote, obviously Friends, Early Edition.
Hard-hitting shows,
yeah. I see. CSI 24, he appears in a lot of single episode roles. All right, so let's talk about some of the standout moments for each character, at least what each character, what you noticed about each character.
Okay.
I'll start with Monica. So Monica is excitable and kind of lovable upon first glance. Now, let me just say this with Monica's probably my least favorite character of the entire series. But in this episode, yes, Monica is the star, and she seems to be the glue to the group.
Well, yeah. And
everybody kind of congregates around Monica.
So this is what's funny. She ultimately becomes one of my least favorites. But in this episode, she was very likable.
Yes, I agree.
I wish we could have kept a little bit more of that in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Chandler is witty and sarcastic, and his friends seem to be used to this.
Mm-hmm. This is nothing new to them.
Right, right. And Joey is likable and kind of doofy.
So Joey lacks any kind of depth.
Yes.
I mean, like, I get that he's supposed to be just a dumb doofus, handsome, I don't want to say loser. Is that hard?
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's a loser. He's just that guy that just hangs around, and you don't really know where his life's going to go.
So but he
doesn't seem to be going anywhere right now. Yeah. But he's not a loser, because I'm assuming he lives in an apartment. He has a job. I mean,
does he?
Well, I guess we'll find out in the next few episodes.
I guess we will find out. But I felt like they left him just very open and unwritten.
Yes, for sure. And
I would have liked to have seen just a tad bit more there.
Well, what's funny is Joey ends up becoming my favorite character.
Yeah, mine too.
Near the end.
Yeah, mine too.
Okay. Phoebe is eccentric and free-spirited. I like how you called her whimsical. She's kind of like a 90s hippie.
So it felt like to me that they didn't intend for her to become a main character. I don't know that that's the case, but it just felt like they were leaving her on the edge.
Yeah, I think they meant for her to be a main character. I don't think that they knew how her arc was going to be either. I think they thought she was going to be kind of like a Dharma from Dharma and Greg type character, you know?
Well, yeah, because, you know, out of the blue, the guys tried to convince her to come over and help them put the furniture together.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, oh, I should do that, but the thing is, I don't want to.
Right.
Something like that.
Right.
Right after that, then...
I wish I could.
But oh, I wish I could, but the thing is, I don't want to.
Right.
Which, I'm going to use that line. then the next scene we see her, it's so out of place. She's playing her guitar, singing one of her songs in the subway.
Right.
And then that's that. And I'm like, this is just random.
She's singing in the subway for money.
It's the first time we get an insight into Phoebe's musical career.
Right. Right. And maybe she's a... I don't want to say she's a loner, because obviously she's hanging out with her friends, but she obviously is the type of person who can kind of go her own way.
Yes.
Ross is depressed and emotional. He wants love and wants to be loved.
He's looking for love in all the wrong places.
Rachel is spoiled and scared. She does not understand how to survive in the real world, which I've already talked about. But she does know that she does not want to marry Barry.
That's the one thing we get. We do know.
Yes.
She's done with Barry.
Correct.
Did you think it was kind of funny that she, on her wedding day, she realizes she's making a mistake if she marries this guy. So she runs away to get away from the situation. And she goes looking for Monica. Yet Monica was not a close enough friend to be at the wedding, which Monica points out.
Right.
But...
Well, she's not going to run to somebody that is at the wedding.
I mean, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you run to, like, your brother or your friend or your son? You know, she just, like, left them all behind.
Right. I think because she probably felt like they were going to pressure her into getting married.
Yeah. And then Monica was very forgiving to say, well, I haven't been close enough to be a part of your life recently, or to be invited to your wedding, but yeah, I'll put up with you and take you in for a while.
Right. So let's talk about some of the more memorable scenes. What about Ross lamenting about being divorced and saying, I just want to be married again. And right as he finishes, Rachel comes running in wearing a wedding dress.
Yeah. And then, of course, we don't know this right now, but poor little Ross... He's going to be married quite a few times.
Exactly. And I love it when he says that and Rachel comes running in. Chandler looks at the door and throws his hand out and goes, and I just want $1 million. Like, if you just say something out loud, it's going to come through the door, right?
There was this quick little, almost like Three Stooges shtick with the umbrella when Monica officially introduces or reintroduces, because they should know each other from high school, Ross and Rachel, and his umbrella flings open.
Yes, it's Charlie Chaplin-esque to
there
me.
There you go. Yes.
So that was our introduction to Rachel, right? The scene where Paul comes in and the gang just kind of gangs up on him, talking to him, and he never says a word. Like, not one word. I thought he was going to be like Harpo Marx this whole episode. I didn't think he was going to talk.
So we were kind of quiet during this episode when we were watching it together recently, except you did point out, like, is he going to speak?
Right.
Does this man have anything to say?
Some other scenes. What about them watching the Spanish soap opera and obviously not understanding a word that anybody's saying, but they're all yelling out lines that they either believe the characters are saying or they want the characters to say?
It's so funny because I remember actually doing something like that, similar to that with my friends, only we just had the volume down.
Okay.
It was like some old school movie that was on TBS at some random time, and we had the volume down, and it caught our attention, and we stopped, and we started dubbing in what we thought the actors were saying. So I really related to that, and it brought back some good memories for me. But the thing that was interesting, I don't think that we hear in this episode that Joey's an actor.
I don't think we do either.
So my gut was like, oh, they're watching this. It's some kind of homework for him, or it has something to do with his career.
Right.
But if it does, they sure don't.
They don't mention it.
They don't say that. So right. I don't know if that was a little clue for us as to what was to come, or maybe it was a scene was cut together, and that's why we don't hear officially that he's an actor. But
so after the date, Monica working and talking to a coworker about Paul the wine guy and finding out that Paul the wine guy has used this same line on that coworker.
Oops.
Monica's feeling pretty proud of herself, and then all of a sudden, the wind went out of her sails.
That's a hard one to learn.
And then, of course, we have the ending with them all back in the coffee house, where Joey's making fun of Monica's gullibleness about how he can't believe that she didn't realize that that was a line. And we also have Rachel with her first job working at the coffee shop.
So she alludes to the fact that she's out looking for a job and she's having absolutely no luck because she has no talents or desire to work.
No skills.
No skills. Yeah. There you go. She has no skills to work. But turns out she can make coffee?
No, she can't. She cannot make coffee because Joey and Chandler dump it into Monica's plant, which probably dies quickly after that. All right, let's talk about the music. Question. The theme song, I'll Be There For You, by the Rembrandts. That was written by the Rembrandts and used for the show, or that was written for the show, and the Rembrandts got to perform it.
Are you asking me
which? I am asking you.
So I don't know the answer, so I could be going to make myself look stupid, but here we go. It's not the first time. I think it was a song and they used it for the show.
No, it was written specifically for the show by the writers.
Okay, so here's what I think. I think it was written specifically.
So it was, as I mentioned, it was performed by the Rembrandts. It hit 17 on the Billboard Hot 100. It hit number one on the Adult Contemporary chart and number one on the Radio Airplay chart.
It's the first theme song for a television show that I remember hearing on the radio. You just don't, that doesn't happen often.
Yeah. Obviously, it got a lot of radio airplay, and the show's popularity actually made this song a hit, and the fact that it's catchy.
It's a good song.
Yeah, it's a catchy song.
I want to say that the pilot episode is like the only time we see the full opening of the cast dancing in the water fountain. Mm-hmm.
It may be. I guess we'll find out when we watch the next episode.
When that started, I got the warm fuzzies.
Right. Did you know that NBC originally reached out to REM because they wanted to use Shiny Happy People as the theme song.
Had no idea. I've never heard that.
And REM turned them down.
Whoa.
Well, that's all I have on the music. Are you ready to move on to the next section?
What are we moving on to?
Themes and issues. So, to me, this episode had two main themes. One is friendship.
Yeah.
It's the pilot episode, and the writers want us to know just how good of friends these five are with each other. They tell stories, they hang out in the coffee shop, they hang out at each other's homes. The boys help Ross put together some furniture. Obviously, with the scene that we talked about with them hanging out, talking like with lines from the Spanish soap opera, you know, they obviously hang out together a lot and have a lot of fun together. Another theme here, as the theme song goes to Married with Children, the other theme here is love and marriage.
Love and marriage, love and marriage.
Ross's wife moves out on the same day that Rachel leaves her fiancé at the altar.
Ooh, I feel like that fate might be talking.
Fate might have happened. So how do you think these themes, obviously these are themes from 1994, but how do you think they relate to today?
Well, I think especially Ross's storyline was probably a little cutting edge.
Yeah.
Back in 94.
Absolutely.
I'm thinking 94, that situation was probably not something that we were talking about or seeing a ton of.
Not a ton of, yes. What about just friendship in general? Do you think 20-somethings still get together either at coffee shops or bars or hang out at each other's houses and apartments like that? Or do you think everybody's just kind of solitary at this
point? I hope so. I have no idea because you and I are so old now. We could have a 20-something-year-old.
Yes.
Thank goodness we don't. But we could. But I sure hope they do, because that is such a pivotal time in someone's life. When you don't know who you are, you're trying to figure out who you are, you're stumbling, you're making mistakes, but you've got the friendships to pick you back up, right? And that's ultimately what this episode was about. So I feel like if 20-something-year-olds aren't going through this, then they're missing a very pivotal developmental stage in life.
So here's what I noticed. Ross has hit rock bottom in his life, right?
But he hits it a couple more times.
I know, but at this point in his life,
to date, this is rock bottom.
Ross has hit rock bottom, and his friends are there to support him. Mm-hmm. They're there at the coffee house with him. They help him put together furniture because he's got to move out of his apartment into a new apartment. So you have that there. Or either that, or he's still living in the same apartment and ex-wife takes all the furniture. So you have that. Monica hits a low, right? Monica's on a high.
Yeah, she realizes.
And then hits a low.
She's done something that doesn't make her feel too good about herself.
Right. And Rachel has hit both a high and a low.
Yeah.
Right? Like, she realizes that she's getting ready to live a loveless life, and so she takes off running, and I think she feels great about that. I think she's scared, but I think she feels great about that. But then she realizes that everybody around her has jobs,
yeah,
and that Daddy has cut her off,
yeah,
and that now she's going to have to go to work.
Right.
And so I think I don't think she's necessarily hit a low. I think she's just had her eyes open,
yeah,
for the first
sure.
time.
For sure.
All right, moving on. I have next the best three lines from the episode. You know, if yours are the same as mine, then we only need to say them once. But I'm hoping that we have some different ones, but it's possible that we have the same ones.
The first one that I'm going to mention, I've actually already mentioned it, mm-hmm, but it's when one of the guys, I think it's Joey, says, "Hey, Phoebes, do you want to help?" Talking about putting the furniture together. And she says, "Oh, I wish I could, but I don't want to."
Yes.
That's a fantastic love that. Line. I'm telling you, I'm filing that one back and I'm using it.
So one of my lines I've already mentioned, and that's with Chandler going, "And I just want $1 million. So my second one, I'm kind of crisscross here. My second one is Monica waking up the morning after the date to find Chandler and Joey in her apartment and saying, "Oh, good, Lenny and Squiggy are here."
Oh, that's hysterical. Yes.
So I'm loving the Laverne and Shirley reference. And I'm also going to ask you, did you notice that at one point, I think it was Rachel, was watching Happy Days, and where the episode where Joni and Chachi get married?
Yes.
And so I love the older pop culture references that the pilot episode brings out here. And I have a feeling it's not going to be the last time that we get older pop culture references.
So I enjoyed when Paul first arrives at the apartment and Monica introduces him. Mm-hmm. And then everybody's saying, hey, Paul, hey, Paul, hey, Paul, hi, Paul. And Chandler says, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name. Paul, was it? I mean, that's typical. That's so Chandler right there.
Well, that's funny because my third quote is also a Chandler. And the reason why I liked it so much is because this is exactly how I felt in my mid-20s. All right, kids, I got to go to work. If I don't input those numbers, it doesn't make much difference. Right? And that's exactly how I felt about my career, my job and my career in my early 20s. It wasn't a place that I wanted to be working. It wasn't a job that I wanted to be working, but it paid the bills. And so I took it, but it certainly wasn't what I had envisioned as a youngster.
Right. Right? Yeah.
About what I was going to do with my life.
Have I done three? Because I've got another one.
You've got one more.
Okay, good. When Monica tells Rachel, welcome to the real world. It sucks. You're going to love it. I think that should be the name of this episode.
Welcome to the real world. It sucks. You're going to love it. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, time to move on to the rating and review. Not of this show, which we hope that you'll do after this show, but of the pilot episode. So out of 10, we're going to rate the following categories. Humor. Emotional depth, character development, plot engagement, and overall rating.
Okay, so 1 is the lowest and 10 is the highest.
Correct.
So like if I didn't think it did anything, I would give it a 1.
Correct.
And if it blew my socks off, it's a 10.
Correct.
Okay.
So for humor, where are you going?
I'm going to give it a 5.
Okay, I was going to give it a 7.
Whoa.
Let me give it a 7.
Okay.
What about emotional depth?
A 4.
Wow, you're really tough because I gave it an 8.
I am a tough cookie.
Because I'm thinking of Ross's depression, Monica's giddiness down to her feeling low because she got played. Rachel's just kind of giddiness at running away, but fear of what's coming. And then her on the phone with her dad, her on the phone with Barry, or with Barry's answering machine. Okay, so, wow, you're tough. Okay, what about character development?
6.
Okay, so I'm going to give that a 7, just because we have to try to get to know 6 people in 22 minutes. Right. And I feel like the writers and actors did a good job of this.
I think they did, too. I mean, I wanted to see more, but I think you're right. Okay. They did the best they could.
What about plot engagement?
Oh, I'm going to give that an 8.5.
Okay, good. I gave it a 7. So I think the pacing of the show's great considering we don't know anyone.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we feel like we know everyone except for maybe Joey. So the only real lull in the show to me is Rachel talking to her dad on the phone and then leaving Barry messages over and over and over again on the phone. This is 2 to 3 years before Swingers comes out and Mikey has the horrible message debacle with Nikki. I think that's pretty funny.
And we see...
pretty fortuitous.
We see Monica in a few years down the road having answering machine issues with Richard's
phone. Yes. All right. So what are you giving the overall rating of the show?
I'm giving it an 8.5.
Okay. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10 just for it being a pilot. If you're just rating it as a pilot compared to other pilots, it's one of the best pilots that I've ever seen.
Wow.
But if I fast forward because I know how good the show's going to get, I'm only giving it a 6 out of 10. So now that we've rated everything, why don't you tell us what some of the critics said?
So USA Today highlighted the show's snappy dialogue and called it a promising addition to NBC's lineup. People Magazine praised the ensemble cast as charming and relatable. Some of the more critical reviews came from, I guess, predictability. Some critics argued that the premise wasn't particularly original and drew comparisons to other ensemble sitcoms like Seinfeld and Living Single. I disagree, I think, with that. I felt like it was pretty original. For the 90s, I felt like it was good.
I would agree with that.
New York Times, the show felt formulaic and noted it could struggle to distinguish itself. Wow, NYT, you got it wrong. Woo! A few reviews mentioned that the characters leaned heavily on stereotypes, such as the nerdy Ross or the spoiled Rachel.
I mean,
maybe.
I mean, I guess Ross, yeah, I mean, no doubt that Ross was nerdy, but he wasn't nerdy like you would think of nerds in the 80s. So when I think of nerds on television, I think of like Arvid from Head of the Class, or maybe, and this is really going old school, but Freddie from Silver Spoons. You know, Ross isn't the typical nerd, right?
Right.
He's kind of, he's a little awkward, but he's relatable.
I got one more for you. I wasn't going to read this, but I just realized what it says, and I think you're going to like it. So, critics noted that the series captured the zeitgeist of the 1990s, addressing themes like friendships, dating, and career struggles in a lighthearted and accessible way. That's for you, Jim.
That's pretty good there. I like that. All right. So, next week, we have coming up episode 2, which is titled The One with the Sonogram at the End.
Oh.
And this is the one where Ross is shocked at the pregnancy of his ex-wife, Carol. But Carol says that she and her life partner, Susan, want him to be involved, but only if he's comfortable with it. So there's your teaser for next week if you've never seen Friends. If you have seen Friends, go ahead and rewatch it with us. Watch the show. Send any questions that you may have our way or anything you want us to mention. Any theories that you may have. We look forward to that. We love the fan engagement.
So I have one more question for you, or one more maybe comment, and then it would kind of throw out a question.
Okay.
NBC worried that Monica's decision to take the relationship with the wine guy, Paul, to the next step, that might turn viewers off. That might offend people, and it might make her out to be, I don't like the S word, so I'm not going to use it, but, you know, kind of easy.
Right.
I feel like that was a normal 20-year-old's reaction to a situation. I don't feel like it was out of place. Do you think that would have offended you, or did that offend you, or did that turn you off to the show or to her character then?
I think it was a different time back then, and that television audiences weren't necessarily used to engaging in these types of topics.
So maybe we were doing it out in our real lives, but we weren't watching it on TV.
Right.
Okay. I'm sure we'll have the chance to rehash similar things in this show as we go along.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in. We hope that you'll join us next week.
Remember, we're just going to get better.
Absolutely. So you can go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Tell somebody we want the show to grow. And of course, you can always reach out to us via email or social media. Our email is theonewherewewatchfriendspod@gmail.com.
You can find us on social media at Facebook, X, Instagram, Threads. Our handle is theonewherewewatchfriends.
I hope you'll tune in next week as we rewatch episode 2, The One with the Sonogram at the End. We will see you then.
Bye-bye.